Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
Good evening and welcome to the Vectis Radio Movie Review Show. My name is Tosin and I will be holding your hand through the next hour or so as we talk about what's on at the cinema recently, what you should see, what you shouldn't see, what we've liked and what we haven't liked, and the films that we have seen that we're going to just come back and keep revisiting again and again. With me tonight are Sean.
Hello there.
And Sharon.
Hello.
As always, yes, my two intrepid sort of fellow explorers of film stuff. How have you guys been doing this week?
I only just sort of just finished work just before Sharon came in.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it's it was
a nice day. So you,
a nice day,
has
yeah.
To do,
everybody
to
has
do,
to do stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been a beautiful day today, isn't it? I mean, it's just been gorgeous.
Well, that's good enough for you guys. I mean, you guys are on the island. I am in Southampton, so I don't think it was that great a day.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah,
you missed
blue
it.
Blue skies.
Yeah, everybody was really happy. Yeah. Everybody seemed in a really good mood today. Yeah. What did you think of the Oscars then, Tosin?
Oh, the Oscars. I was actually... Okay. Let's kick off with the Oscars.
Yeah.
Let's start off with the big one. Picture of the year. The big winner on the night of the Oscars was The Shape of Water.
Yeah.
The Guillermo del Toro fantasy fishman film.
Yeah.
Well, I don't agree with that. I'm sorry.
You don't know.
I didn't think it was the best film of the last 12 months.
I enjoyed it very much, but
I didn't think it was the best film I'd ever seen or the best film of the last year.
I think Shape of Water as the best film of the year, I honestly don't... I mean, I watched it, but I thought it was really, really straightforward. I mean, I kept waiting for something to come out of left field and be like, ooh, that's different. I thought it was really straightforward. And the central relationship in the film, I didn't buy. I didn't buy it. It was kind of like...
You know, the lady and the aquatic man.
I really enjoyed the cinematography. I mean, I loved that. It was absolutely lovely. You know, the cinema and the...
You'll find no argument from me there.
You know, that was actually beautiful. And the couple of issues I had was the fantasy scenes, you know. I mean, I found those a bit out of kilter, if you will. But, I did really enjoy this movie, I have to say.
Yeah, I liked it. I think I would have liked a bit more to establish their relationship, because basically it goes from giving him a couple of boiled eggs to, smooching in the bathtub. So I couldn't really. There wasn't to me. There wasn't. They didn't develop that relationship to the point where, you know, it was, you know, the love of her life.
Yeah.
Liked it, but yeah, I didn't feel it was. I didn't love it.
No.
As much as I'd hoped that I would, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I have to agree with that because of all the sort of like just what was going on and everything that was being said about it and all the sort of hype about it. I was expecting that because this is the guy who directed Pan's Labyrinth. And when you talk about like, you know, fantasy sequences and like, you know, a more grounded reality and all that kind of stuff, he pulled that off with Pan's Labyrinth. I thought that was brilliant. I think Pan's Labyrinth is a brilliant film.
I actually preferred The Shape of Water to Pan's Labyrinth. Funny enough. I preferred The Shape of Water to Pan's Labyrinth. I don't know about you, Sharon.
I'm the other way around.
Yeah,
to compare the two, I think where Pan's Labyrinth, we hadn't seen anything quite like that before. And so that was what made it so entrancing, I think, because it was unlike anything that we'd seen. Whereas...
I mean, I liked it.
There was something slightly familiar about Shape of Water, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, I found it just a little bit too long, I think, Pan's Labyrinth. I mean, I loved the start of it.
Yeah.
It was great. Spanish Civil War, all that stuff was absolutely brilliant. But then it seemed to drag on a little bit for me, personally. Whereas Phantom Thread, what we're talking about, The Shape of Water in my opinion, it was about. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lovely film, but yeah, not the best film of the year.
No. Okay.
I don't think it was the year then.
You've got The Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Phantom Thread, Three Billboards, Get Out, The Post, Call Me by My Name, and Lady Bird.
Of those, I would have put Dunkirk for my. Of all of those, Dunkirk or Darkest Hour, I would have gone for.
I think I might have gone Three Billboards.
Yeah. I think I probably would have, looking at the list now, I think I probably would have have to say, I think I agree with that, out of the list that's there.
Shape of Water.
I mean, the Shape of Water out of the list, yeah. I mean, I did like Three Billboards. That probably would have been my second one. And Get Out I really liked. I thought that was pretty good.
I love Get Out. I absolutely love Get Out. I'm not sure about Film of the Year.
No.
That's my, yeah. I think I would rather watch Get Out, but I would put Get Out above, in front of Shape of Water.
Oh, right, okay.
I'd rather watch Get Out before, apart from before The Shape of Water. Because the thing with it is, I just felt that it was very, very sort of straightforward. And it was kind of like, and you had Michael Shannon. Michael Shannon shows up and he plays the same bad guy that we've seen Michael Shannon play before. And I was just like, okay, come on, give me something. I heard somebody refer to it as, it's like, essentially, this film is Free Willy if the boy and the whale slept together. And honestly, when I think about it, I'm like,
that would be an interesting premise.
Yeah. When I listened to that, I was kind of like, that guy has, it was on the Empire Film podcast, and I was like, yeah, he has a massive point. He has a massive, because the film is, it's just like, you know, the central relationship and the whole idea that this woman has this thing, feels this thing for this creature, and then so much so that she wants to help him and get him out of this, like, what institution that he's in. I'm just kind of like, it seemed to go from naught to 60 in absolutely no time, with no real reason as to what is the connection between these two characters. Yeah. It's like, what's the connection between these two characters? Why, and all of a sudden, and they keep mentioning about how dangerous this is and about how much they're risking their lives, but they never say why. It's like, you know, all of a sudden, yeah, we're going to risk our lives, but why are we going to risk our lives? And so I feel like, as you said, the cinematography and everything, the production design is brilliant. I think Sally Hawkins is a brilliant actress. I think she does really, really well in the film. Doug Jones, as obviously he does, that guy does wonders with prosthetics on his face and all that kind of stuff. But they're just a bit, I felt like the Michael Shannon character was too broad. Because I just felt like...
He was just creepy, wasn't he? He was just like Mr. Creepy McCreepy from Creepy Town.
Exactly, and Michael Shannon does that in his sleep.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen the TV show Boardwalk Empire, it felt very, very similar to the character that he plays in Boardwalk Empire. Like, he just didn't even have...
The film I really liked was called The Iceman, that he's been in. If you don't know, it came to Cineworld for like 3 days in shilly time, and I managed to catch it, and that's a really good... That's worth a watch.
So... So, with that, essentially, I was a bit disappointed by The Shape of Water. I did not think that the hype around the film was justified.
Fair dues.
What about the best actors and actresses, Diggs, then? What did you think about Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman, well, I loved his performance in Darkest Hour. I think Gary Oldman is brilliant in the film. But the thing is, when it comes to the Oscars, you have to accept after a while that sometimes it just gets political. Sometimes it just gets to a point where it feels as if people have decided this is what is going to happen and nobody will change our minds.
Everybody knew that was going to happen, really.
It was a foregone conclusion almost, wasn't it? But I think people got the feeling that, you know, it was like he's been around a long time, 30 odd years, let's give him the Oscar. But I think it was deserved. I think it was a good performance.
I think out of the other nominees as well, he definitely.
What was he up against? I don't think I've seen all of them.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Haven't seen Phantom Thread.
And Timothy Chalamet, I haven't seen him called by the name because it didn't come to Timothy Chalamet.
I've seen the trailer for it.
And then is it Daniel Kaluuya? That's how it's
Daniel Kaluuya. Daniel
Kaluuya for Get Out and Denzel Washington. So
for Roman J. Israel, a film that hasn't really done anything. Well, I haven't even seen it.
I've not even.
So of all those films, I've only actually seen one.
But no, I'd agree. I'd agree. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis is great, but Gary Oldman, you know.
I'm happy with that one.
Yeah.
The truth is that I'm happy with that one.
Move on to the actress.
All right. So best actress. Yep. So we had Sally Hawkins up for The Shape of Water, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya, Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird, Meryl Streep in The Post because she's Meryl Streep. And
she's the equivalent of Daniel Day-Lewis,
right? Yeah. She says, you turn up, you get
pretty much. It's like we won't give her the award, but we'll nominate her. Yeah. She's made a film this year. We'll nominate her. It's like she probably got an Oscar nomination for Mamma Mia. But
do you agree with that one?
So, Frances McDormand, I think she's brilliant. I've loved Frances McDormand for years, and I think she is really, really good in Three Billboards. Mm. So I think looking at who she's up against, I just saw Lady Bird, so I think it's better than Lady Saoirse Ronan in Lady Bird. I haven't seen I, Tonya, so you guys would have to speak about
that. That would have been my pick straight away. I wouldn't even have hesitated. Mine would be Margot Robbie for I, Tonya, straight up there.
Yeah.
By far. I've seen Three Billboards as well. I really enjoyed it, but I just really, really thought Margot Robbie was superb in that film. Absolutely superb.
Yeah, as for a complete transformative performance.
Yes, definitely.
You know, she doesn't play the same role twice, does she? Whereas some people have their characteristics, or they have their little towels that they do when they're acting. I think Margot Robbie, she doesn't have a towel, does she? She's completely different.
Different, yeah, yeah.
So I thought, in terms of her becoming, you know, Tonya.
Did you see?
She did. I've seen I, Tonya, yeah.
She's great, isn't she?
I thought I liked it, but it was too long for me.
Yeah, a bit too long for you.
And I didn't like the pacing of it.
Yeah.
But no, I thought her performance was spot on.
Yeah. Best supporting actor then. We had Sam Rockwell, Woody Harrelson, Christopher Plummer, William Dafoe, and Richard Jenkins.
So of all of those, the only performance I saw was Richard Jenkins.
Right, okay.
And I did like him in Shape of Water, I have to say. I find it difficult to judge them all because I haven't seen all of the performances. But
was Richard Jenkins the scientist?
No, he was the best friend, the illustrator.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Yeah, I know. Now, for me, none of you have seen The Florida Project, but I would have given it to William Dafoe for The Florida Project.
Yeah, I've heard really, really impressive things about that.
Yeah, brilliant. So, I mean, I really like that.
And it's interesting that Christopher Plummer got the nod, because he obviously only stepped into that film at the last minute, didn't he?
I really didn't like that movie.
Yeah.
All the money in the world, wasn't it?
But what I thought he was the lead actor was, I didn't realise you'd class him as the supporting role.
And
I think... Frankly, I've got to be honest with you. I don't see why everybody is so enamored with Sam Rockwell's performance.
No. I think Woody Harrelson was
That would have been my call.
To be honest,
that would have been my call, because I've seen all of them but the Florida Project, and I thought Woody Harrelson in Three Billboards was absolutely amazing.
I thought he was too. With Woody, I'm a little bit, you know, because maybe some of the films he's been in, but I thought he was excellent in the role he played. Really, really good.
I thought he was excellent. I thought he was heartbreaking. Mm. I thought he was humorous. He was just he gave you this sort of character that you wanted to see good things happen for that character. And I think Woody Harrelson I would rate his performance in Three Billboards above Sam Rockwell.
Definitely. I agree with you on that, Tozin. Really.
But it just seemed to be that at the beginning, there seemed to be this thing that came out and the narrative you kept hearing was, Sam Rockwell makes this racist cop, who I don't actually think was that racist, I've got to be honest with you. Watching the film, it's like they put this label, he makes a racist cop, and he actually gives him a heart, and he makes him he makes him relatable, and I'm like, yeah, but no. So for me, I love Sam Rockwell, he's been in a lot of things, I love almost everything that he does everything that he doesn't. And I do like his performance in Three Billboards, but I just think don't think it was even the best supporting performance in that film.
No.
So,
there you go. So let's come on to the actresses then. Alison Janney.
Supporters, yeah.
Yeah, the best supporting actress.
Alison Janney, let's see. I've seen two out of the five films that were on that list, even though Mudbound is on Netflix, so I should be able to see that. But the truth is, The truth is that Alison Janney, I'm not going to argue with that. It's Alison Janney, for goodness sake.
It was brilliant.
She was extraordinary in that.
but I do have to say that Leslie Manville in Phantom Thread was one of the best parts in it. I haven't seen it, but I have
heard good things about Leslie Manville.
Leslie Manville. She was a good runner-up. But
it would have been quite interesting, though, hadn't it, had she won?
Yeah.
Because she and Gary Oldman were married famously for a short time.
Were they?
And so it would have been interesting to have them take those pictures at the end, wouldn't they?
when
opposing with their two Oscars, you know. Would they have to be separated by the best supporting ones?
Yeah.
So that...
But no, so we all agree.
It didn't happen.
We all agree with Alice and Janie. Yeah. Is that a Janie?
Janie. If there's, even if I haven't seen Itonia yet, and the truth is that if they told me Alice and Janie won an Oscar and I hadn't seen the film, I don't care. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine with
that. Yeah, you're dead. She was extraordinary. Awesome. Just awful woman, wasn't she? There's hardly any redeeming qualities about her, but she plays it remarkably well.
Indeed, she does.
Although I have to say something. I think Best Supporting Actress might be the strongest field, because looking at it, I'm looking at for instance, I look at Best Actor, and I look at them, and I look at all those performances, and I think, I do think Gary Oldman stands out.
Yes.
Over and above the other ones. And so, but I look at Best Supporting Actress, and I'm thinking, actually, that's a tough call. That is, it's a really, because I just saw Lady Bird, we'll talk about that later, and Laurie Metcalf is brilliant in Lady Bird. Mm. She is playing a role that could very easily have just become one note and become, I'm the harpy mother that doesn't, that secretly hates her daughter or something like that. But the way she sort of plays with it, and the way a lot of scenes in that film just flip on a dime and they go from loving to antagonistic to flat out fighting, I think she's brilliant in that film. Octavia Spencer in The Shape of Water. Really?
I know.
That's good, but I wouldn't put it as one of the best performances of the year.
No.
It's serviceable.
Serviceable. Yeah. That's a good word, yeah.
It's serviceable.
Yeah, she delivers every time, doesn't she? She's reliable. She delivers. Yeah. But you think, is it outstanding? Not compared to what she did in The Help. No.
Mm-hmm. I just don't. Honestly, I don't understand what this crazy amount of love for The Shape of Water is. Good film, but not that great.
Yeah.
So. Okay, cool. I think it's around about time for us to take a break. So we're going to take a break for some ads. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about, as I said, Lady Bird. What else did we see this week? We saw Red Sparrow.
Red Sparrow, and I've seen Game Night.
Game Night, that was it. So we're talking about Lady Bird, Red Sparrow.
Black Panther.
Oh, good. We can hear what your thoughts were.
We like that.
Okay,
that
cool.
That's going to keep cropping up, isn't it, really?
I think it's going to keep cropping. That film was not going anywhere for a while. All right, cool. All right, so we're going to take an ad break now, and we will see you guys back after these messages.
The average radio station has 500 tracks on a rolling playlist. We have over 5,000. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Welcome back to the Movie Review Show on Vectis Radio. And we are cracking on now. We just had an Oscar chat talking about the big five categories in the Oscars and what we thought about them. We didn't always agree, but then again, I think sometimes those are my favorite discussions when we do not agree.
Yeah.
The film that we've all seen, I think, is Red Sparrow, isn't it?
Red Sparrow is indeed, yes.
Yeah. So, okay, we're going to kick off with Red Sparrow because we've all seen that. This is a film that I have to say really surprised me. Because I was not expecting it to be as good as I thought it was.
Mm. Sorry, Sam, off you go.
No, I was thinking, I think I had similar expectations. I thought it was going to be okay, and it was better than I thought it was. I still don't think it really compares to, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, if we're going to talk a sort of post-Cold War stuff. I suppose you'd call this a post-Cold War drama, but it was much better than I thought, because I was thinking, what's on this week? Is that it? And like, oh, okay, I'll go see that then. And actually, I thought it was much better than I was anticipating.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's quite brutal in places, actually.
Oh, yeah.
It's quite brutal.
It really is, yeah.
I was surprised it didn't get a higher certificate, really, because, I mean, some of the things in it were, it was quite nasty.
Yeah, because at the beginning there's this mystery, the CIA guy is rumbled in doing this meeting with a Russian spy, and he's a mystery.
A Russian mole, yeah.
And that's all, the thread is running throughout, who is this guy, and I can't remember what his code name was.
What, the American code name for him?
Moloch or something.
Something
like that, wasn't it, yeah. And they threw out, he was teased throughout, and you think, when you think about it after, you think, it's always going to be someone you've met in the film already. It's never someone completely new.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so basically that comes down to one of, three characters.
Three or four, yeah.
And so you think it's going to be one of those people who actually are this hidden agent. But apart from that, I was thinking, I didn't overthink it. But you sure knew? You worked it out?
Yeah, so I'm really, because I don't know, I'm not normally very good at that, but I sort of...
It's a bit Scooby-Doo, isn't it? Someone you met at the beginning, it's going to be one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, but on the whole, I enjoyed it. I thought it was an okay movie. I wouldn't say it was brilliant, but it was okay.
Well, Sean, I'm actually quite impressed with you that you figured it out, because I think the film does really, really well because, and it's funny that you mentioned Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, Sharon.
Yeah.
Because I was watching this thing and I was thinking there's definitely shades of John Le Carré.
Yeah.
In this.
Yes.
It's a proper spy movie. Like, you know how people talk about James Bond, and James Bond really isn't a spy movie. It's a bit too glossy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and it's more concerned with globe trotting and globe hopping and all that, and gadgets and action.
Yeah. And there's a slight glamorous air to it, isn't there, for Bond?
Except for From Russia with Love, which I think is my favourite Bond film, and that's more like a secret agent movie than any other ones.
Yeah, because there's nothing glamorous about this life, is there? When you see them both sides of it, you know, the American side and the Russian side, there's nothing glamorous about it.
No, it's all nasty.
Who would know, though, that this week that someone in this country would be poisoned potentially by...
I know!
I know. What was so strange, I know this is going off at a bit of a tangent, but I was having a discussion with someone at work, and we were saying about, he was saying, we've got to watch the Russians, and I said, no, they're not interested in us, they won't even bother with us. It started off, and then, of course, I heard on the news in the morning, the first thing I thought was of my mate Clive. I'll give him a mention, and when I went into work, he went, you were thinking of me, weren't you? So anyway, back to the movie.
I watched it the day after the news broke about the nerve agent attack in Salisbury, and I was thinking, oh my word! I was thinking this film is probably banned in Russia. They probably don't want anybody watching this film in Russia. But I think it's sort of like John Le Carré updated for like a new generation. Yeah. And I really, really like that. And I really love the way that they went into it. I mean, Jennifer Lawrence as an actress, I feel like sometimes I feel like people are too quick to praise her. And I'm like, it feels like that it's been a while since I've seen her in a role and I actually thought, oh, wow, she's really good in this role. She's brilliant in this film.
Yeah, I think she picks her roles. If you think what she's been in, like Mother and this one, some of the roles she's picked, which... I should imagine the people that were expecting the Hunger Games actress were probably, or Mystique were probably,
shocked.
Yeah.
because in this film, it stars her and is directed by the guy, Francis Lawrence, who directed the last three Hunger Games movies. Because of that baggage, it comes across as being, you think it might be a young adult adaptation. But as you said, no, some bits of it are quite brutal. It's quite a sort of dyed-in-the-wool spy story. I do think Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is a good thing to compare it to. But one of the triumphs of this film is that there are genuinely scenes in this film where I do not know which way this is going to go. I'm watching it and I'm going, okay, what's going to happen here? I really don't know. Okay, who is that person working for?
That's it. Who's going to double cross
who? It's like, who's going to double cross who? It's like, I don't know. And I think a lot of that comes down to Jennifer Lawrence's performance.
Yeah.
That she totally keeps you guessing as to exactly what is her motivation here. You know she wants to survive, but you don't know what she thinks is her best chance of survival. Is it with the Russians or is it with the Americans?
Yeah, I agree with that.
You never really knew, did you, all the way through which way she was going to go?
You never really knew, right at the very end, really.
Yeah.
And that is the and that for me, I think, elevated the film to so much more than it could have been otherwise.
Yeah.
I feel that whole thing where you're watching and you're thinking, you know what, I actually really, really don't know what's going to happen here. Towards the end, I went, okay, cool. Oh, that's what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. But I think by that time, the film helps you and the film already tells you, like, there's one particular scene that's done in a hospital, in an embassy. And if that scene wasn't there, I think the end of the film would just have been like, I'm not really sure what's going to happen here. Yeah. I'm not really sure who the mole is. I'm not really sure what's going to happen. So I think because this is based on a book that's part of a series of books, I think it's a trilogy of books. And I have to say, compared to a lot of the films we've seen in the past year that are obviously trying to set up a franchise, they're like, ooh, we're going to do this. Oh, guess what's going to happen? Ooh, Tom Cruise is going to come back in this. No, he's not, because this one was rubbish. I felt like this film, the place where it ended, it just focused on telling its own story. It has a nice, potted, self-contained story. But where the film ends, you can see where there's a possibility for sequels. I mean, it could end now and they could say, okay, no more Red Sparrows, and I would be happy.
Yes.
But if they brought, if they said, okay, we're going to do another one because we're going to follow on this story, I think it leaves all the players in a very interesting place as to what could happen next.
Yes, I quite like that open-ended element of it, but I would say I would be quite happy for it to be just a one-off film and to leave it the way it was.
I would think that. I think that's, for me, that would be the best, just to leave it as a film like that and not push it too much.
So what would we give, what star would you, how many out of five would you give that?
I'd give that a three. Solid three.
I would agree. I'd give it a three.
I would give it a very high three.
Right.
It's like if we did this out of 10, I would give it like a seven.
Yes, I think that's fair.
Because, yeah. It's fair comment.
Yeah, yeah, much because, better than I thought, but not. It wasn't.
It was.
It's not quite enough for me to say four stars. Yes. Not quite enough for me to say, oh my god, yeah, you really have to go see this film. It's not quite enough, but it's good enough for me to say.
It's worth a watch.
Yeah, it's worth a watch, definitely.
Because when I first saw the first trailer, I was thinking, oh, I don't even know if I want to watch that at all. But now I would say to someone, yeah, watch it. It's worth a watch.
Yeah.
I think Matthias Koenhertz, who is probably the world's greatest Belgian actor, Jean-Claude Van Damme. But
I think he's great. I don't think there's a film he's done that I haven't liked.
Yeah. I think he's brilliant.
Even
like
things like A Little Chaos, I liked him in that. And I didn't think the film was very good.
Yeah, he's really good. Although I'm not sure whether I just haven't noticed that he looks a little bit like Vladimir Putin, or whether with the makeup they made him look a bit more like Vladimir.
I think they made him look more like Vladimir Putin in this film.
Yeah, because I kept looking at it going, he looks like Vladimir Putin.
I've never registered it before.
Do you know what? I'm going to go off one of my tangents again, just super real quick. I watched a Jackie Chan movie called The Foreigner, right?
And
And it's just a quick one. The IRA are in it, and you've got Pierce Brosnan playing an Irishman who is a spitting image of Jerry Adams. I've never ever seen one, and he would be Jerry Adams. And I'm sure he's got the beard, he's got the glasses, he's got everything. And if you ever get to see that, I mean, I'm not a big Jackie Chan fan, but that was a terrific film, and
but
I think it's on Netflix.
Actors who look like real people. It worked.
So, sorry, just a quickie there. Because I had to say that because it made me think about it when you said look like Putin, because I totally agree with you. It made him look like Putin.
Yeah, no problem with that. Oh, and also, somebody else who doesn't even bother with the accent is Charlotte Rampling. But Charlotte Rampling never bothers with an accent.
She's great. She looks great.
She's great.
She's got a core of steel, hasn't she? And you can see it.
She's got a real nasty because streak.
Her spine is just, because it's been moulded. It hasn't been. It's been moulded out of steel, stainless steel.
Apart from when, because you know she does a lot of acting in French. She appears in quite a few French films.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know the point of view of a French person to see whether when she's speaking, she's actually doing a proper, like, speaking French with a French accent, or whether she's just totally speaking French with an English accent.
Yeah.
Because no matter what nationality she plays in English language films, she has the same accent.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a bit like Sean Connery in that. She's like a female Sean Connery. I think some of the scenes with her, like where they're going through their training, which have a very sort of like almost Full Metal Jacket feel to them.
Yeah.
And I just thought, the film's almost a bit like an origin thing, but it builds its own world. And for quite a while, when the film started, I couldn't tell what time period this film was set in. I was like, is this during the Cold War? Is this supposed to be present day? I actually really don't know. And it wasn't until somebody whips out a smartphone. I'm like, ah, yes, present day. But apart from that, like the architecture they have in Moscow, they make it look as if it hasn't changed since the 80s.
Yeah, it definitely has a nod towards those Cold War dramas, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
And the fact that there's a whole set piece that involves using floppy disks. I'm like, seriously? Who uses floppy disks? I feel like there's a deleted scene that explains why they're using floppy disks, and they just haven't told you. but
perhaps they're easier to conceal or something. Perhaps they don't set off any scanners or anything like that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Maybe there's a scene that explains why they're using these.
Why they're using old tech.
So all in all, it's a film that it's probably my surprise of the year so far.
Yeah, this might surprise me too.
Yeah, it's a film I was not looking forward to in any way, shape, or form, and I was like, oh my word, this is
It's okay.
Geez, I actually quite like this.
Yeah, I think if it hadn't snowed, I probably wouldn't have seen it.
No. No, because we went in the snow, didn't we?
We went in the snow.
Yeah.
I thought, I can't do anything else. We'll go to the pictures.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay, cool. All right, so what film do you guys want to tackle next?
I don't mind. I can quickly mention Game Night.
Go Game Night.
Just
purely.
I wanted to see.
Yeah. Just purely because you're talking about surprises. Now, I'm not a major comedy fan, and I was going to go and see Lady Bird, but it was in the small screen and it looked quite busy. So I thought I'd change my mind and I'd go and see. This is on the Friday, and so I'd go and see Game Night. And
this is the wonder of having unlimited cards.
It is a wonder of having unlimited cards. So yeah. So basically, the story is. These couple, they meet at a quiz night and they just thought they love playing games and they sort of get together and then it goes on a little bit forward in the future and they have these game nights with their friends and then the brother turns up and he says, right, we're going to play this, we're going to play, I've got a game we're going to play, someone's going to be kidnapped and you're going to have to work out who it is and all that. And I mean, when I saw the trailer, I thought, not really, but... This was good. This was a real surprise because you never really know who's real and who's not real. You know, what's going on? Is this bit real? Is this bit real? And I found myself actually laughing at this, at the gags. So from something that I thought was going to be just, you know, this will do. But I do quite like Jason Bateman in comedies, to be honest. I find him quite amusing. And although there's all the cliches in this, all the normal cliches that you'd get, you know, and they've obviously borrowed from other films, but it just works. It's a good movie and it's well worth a watch, believe it or not, because I think you wouldn't bother, would you, Sharon?
No, I know, but my business partner, Andrew, he went to see it at the preview night, the unlimited screening, and he loved it.
Yeah.
And he kept saying to me, you really have to see
this. You really do have to see this movie.
And I was like, oh, comedy? I don't think so.
Well, you know me and comedies, but
I mean, it's not something I would watch, but he really rated it, and he doesn't normally sort of recommend a lot of films.
No. So it's basically all the cliches of... you know, and you can see they borrowed from lots of other movies, but it is just a really fun film to watch. So if you want a bit of a laugh of an evening, it's a good movie to go and see.
Have you heard much?
Yeah, I've you know, you said you were going to see Lady Bird, but then you went and saw Game Night instead.
Yeah.
It was actually the other way around for me. I was going to see Great Game Night, but I got to the cinema too late.
Oh.
So I went to see Lady Bird.
That's a coincidence for you.
Yeah, but Game Night is one. It's I saw the trailer and I thought this could be really good if they do it properly and if they don't just fall into, because like Jason Bateman, he was in the film Horrible Bosses. And it looked like this is a film that if they'd done it well, it could have been really, really, it could have been amazing. But then again, it could have been just like a Horrible Bosses ripoff.
Yeah, that's so, it. That was what my sort of thoughts were gonna be.
Yeah. But from what I hear, they managed to avoid that, and they made like everybody I've noticed have heard speak about this film has just sort of like praised it and said about how great the film is.
Yeah, it is. It's well worth a watch. It's something I probably would not have bothered with, but because of circumstances, I found myself really enjoying the movie.
Yeah, and Sean, to be honest with you, your recommendation to go see this film, knowing the kind of films that you like and knowing the kinds of problems you have with cinema, I'm like, actually, yeah, that's probably the strongest recommendation that I've had.
Thanks, Tozen.
For this film.
Yeah.
It's probably the strongest recommendation I've had that says, okay, yeah, go watch this film. This film is worth your time. So with that, Sean, how many stars would you give it?
Yeah, I'd have to give it a high three, bordering on a four. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, right? Because when you only have five stars, there's actually a lot of variation within three.
Yes. Maybe we should change it to 10.
10, maybe.
Maybe we should, but you'd definitely say go see Game Night.
Yeah, I'd give it a 7 if we were talking of tens.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. Cool. It is. Yeah, it is that time again, that time when we have to go off and get some words from our sponsors. So we will see you after this, when we shall be talking about Lady Bird and also getting a little bit of a Black Panther catch-up.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, see you guys after the break.
Devoted to the Isle of Wight, this is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Hello, and welcome back to the movie review show on Vectis Radio, with you here until 7 o'clock, at which point Brian Curtis shall be taking over with the Eclectic Mix. Now, we are in the, getting towards the end of the week. I've been mentioning throughout the show that I went to see Lady Bird. I've literally have walked out of the cinema, gotten back home, and then started to speak to you guys about this. I went to see Lady Bird. And this is a film that, when it was released, it made headlines because it had a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And it was like the only film ever to have like 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And everybody was raving about it. And there was talk about the fact that Greta Gerwig, who directed it, was nominated she was nominated for an Oscar for Best Director. But throughout the whole awards circuit, people kept mentioning the fact that she wasn't nominated at the Golden Globes. She wasn't nominated for a Director Oscar, Director Golden Globe, at all these different things. And because obviously you have the sort of Time's Up movement, a lot of ladies who have been presenting at awards have been pointing out the fact that, she isn't been getting enough love for this film. And I think even Emma Stone at the Oscars said, and here are the four men who are nominated and Greta Gerwig. So they're making a big point about it because they're saying that it's a first film. She's usually an actor, and it's the first film that she's directed, and everybody's talking about, oh my God, this film, yeah, you got to go see it. So I went to see it today.
Yeah.
Saoirse Ronan was nominated for Best Actress. Laurie Metcalf was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. And the film it's a good film. It's a good film, but it's one of those films where if you were recommending it to people, you'd have to know what they like, because it's one of those films where not much happens.
Okay. So it's a mother-daughter relationship, is it, at its core?
It isn't really at its core. At its core is the character of Lady Bird, who is played by Saoirse Ronan and lives in Sacramento, which she refers to as the Midwest of California, which would mean more to some people. Like, I think it would mean more to like Sean, for instance.
That's the state capital, isn't it, of California, and it is in the middle. It's just sort of north and east of San Francisco.
But it's not as vibrant as San Francisco or Los Angeles then. That's the feeling you get if it's in the Midwest.
I had one night in Sacramento, which was really quite interesting night. So, but I won't go into that too much. But yeah, no, it's just a big. Sacramento's just a city, really. You know, not much character about it, really, except for a few, you know, big buildings downtown and, you know, your normal skyscraper type things. So yeah, no, yeah. I can understand why there's probably not a lot going on there for youngsters.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's one of these things where you have Lady Bird, and she's talking about how she wants to leave Sacramento because, why can't I be on the East Coast where there's culture and all this kind of stuff? And she's pretty much being like, you know, a typical teenager thinking like, you know, the place that she's growing up is holding her back. And it's about her, and it's about her going through all these different things and all that. What I think is different, because a couple of years ago there was a film called Edge of 17, with Hailee Steinfeld, which has very similar themes in it as to the mother and the daughter squabbling and her thinking that everything in her life is going wrong and fighting with the best friend because she can't get out of her own way. So it has a lot of the similar themes. But what I think might be different about this is the fact that it's directed by a woman. I can't really speak to it, but I feel like a lot of women have been responding to this film. Not being a woman, I can't really say. So it seems to be like this. The approach to this is probably a bit more authentic from a female point of view or from a female voice and all that. And there are some really, really funny lines in the film. There are some. And I think the opening scene of the film is actually really impressive, because I was talking about earlier how Laurie Metcalf does a lot of scenes in this film where she. The scene starts off and it seems like everybody's happy and okay and all that. And it's like, you know, real conversations that you have where somebody says one thing and then all of a sudden the conversation switches and you're no longer having fun, but there's a bit of needle in there. There's a bit of grit. Yeah. And they do that really, really well in this film. It keeps switching. It keeps, especially with the scenes between Saoirse Ronan and Laurie Metcalf, between the mum and the daughter, those scenes are really, really good. I think Laurie Metcalf's final scene in the film is a tearjerker. She is just so good in it, and I feel like where the film ends up, it ends up in what I feel like it ends up in the kind of You know how it is when you talk about people and you talk about when you're growing up and you're like, oh, you know, when you're young, you don't realize this, but when you get to this age and then you realize what your parents did for you when they were growing up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Teenage years, teenage angst. I remember it well.
I bet you were
a bit naughty in your teenage years, were you? Or was you a good...
No, I tried to be, but my parents were too disciplining. I really did not get away with much.
No. I don't think I was.
Oh.
Oh, I was... I've always described myself as a non-conformist.
Non-conformist.
In religion and in life. Right. And so I don't regard it as rebellious. I regard it as being... If I don't want to do that, I just won't do it.
Yeah.
So I don't regard. I don't think that I should be made to conform to anything that I don't choose to.
Yeah, I could.
So that's not rebellious. That's just being true to yourself, I think.
Yeah.
My parents just didn't let me get away with much. So with this film, I think where it ends up, I think it ends up in. It's not a groundbreaking place that it ends up in, but the way in which it goes, I think the performances are really good. I think the story, you get to feel for these characters and you get to actually sort of like the characters and like, you know, what's going on with them. Like even her, she has a sort of like, she has a non-conventional family unit, and her dad, her dad is a great character in the film. I think it's a very, very well done film. I think it's a bit like, you know how Deadpool was released, I think 2 years ago now, and everybody was talking about Deadpool like, oh my God, it's so great, so fresh.
Yeah.
But when you actually break it down, Deadpool isn't, it's pretty much a straightforward superhero movie. But what is different is the approach to which they take to it.
Yes.
Like the storyline and everything like that is nothing groundbreaking, but it's the approach. And I feel that there's something different about Lady Bird, and I think it might be the fact that it's a story about a young girl that was written and directed by a woman. So it's being told by a woman. So I feel like that's what makes it a little bit different if I compare it to something like Edge of 17. But yeah, but I think some people will not like it because they'll be like, well, nothing happens. And yeah, it's more of a character study than it is about plot, about go from here to there, then to there, to there, to there. Yeah, I'll give it 4 out of 5. Okay. I'll give it just about 4 out of 5. But that comes with the caveat that there's a lot of people who I do not think will like this film because not much happens.
It sounds like something I might like.
Yeah, and probably me. Perhaps we'll go watch it.
Yeah.
Because I should imagine, hopefully, it'll be on for a little while. But you never know with Cineworld.
you never know with the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, the Isle of Wight. All right, okay. So
that's a recommendation then. Now, what I'm really interested in, I'm not sure how much time we've got left, but I'm really interested in Sharon's take on Black Panther. I think we need to hear what Sharon's got to say about it because we've been
I think we've got about 5 minutes.
We've got five minutes. Sharon.
Oh, I don't know if I'd better talk that long about it. But I went to see it full of expectations and I wasn't let down.
I didn't think
it was as fabulous as I had been entirely led to believe, but I certainly thought it was an enjoyable piece of filmmaking, and I think it adds to the Marvel universe. So I think it expands our understanding of the Marvel universe, and so it puts us in a different place for Infinity War, which I think it's a good installment in the whole thing. I liked the way that it was sort of true to itself, really, wasn't it? It was about these characters, and it didn't look at how the world saw them. It looked at how they saw themselves. That was the focus, which I liked. Because often you see the characters of a lot of the other characters through the prism of how the world views them. And I thought, no, this was actually quite enclosed. It's like Wakanda is this cut off, sort of the self-isolating sort of culture in many ways.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was interesting to see how they viewed it within the prism of their own culture rather than how the rest of the world would see them.
Sure. Did you think it would have made a standalone movie, though? Do you think
I wouldn't have. Yes, there's enough in there to make it interesting about the way a society would develop if it was isolated.
Sure.
The way you would identify into these clans, and that they would have their own language than their own identity, that they would certainly would develop in a different way. So even in because we see in our country, you know, within one country, we're so different. So to say that you are Wakandian would be, if that is the right term, it doesn't mean one thing. To say you're British doesn't mean one thing.
No.
So I thought that was interesting in a just a sort of cultural thing, the way they recognise that just because you're from one place doesn't mean that you're going to be the same as everybody else.
Yeah, they keep the diversity there, don't they? Yeah. So they're still diverse, although they're all in the same.
So like you're from Nigeria, Tosin, so they're not saying, this is what a Nigerian is like, because you know that there's more than one thing that you can be. because you're going to be influenced by so many different things. So I like the way that they say, that just because you're from one place doesn't mean that you're all going to be exactly the same and have the same cultural influences or the same, just come from the same place.
Yeah.
So I thought that was
good. That's one of the things I absolutely love about the film. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I've already gone on, and I realized after last week that there was a question that you asked Sharon that I never actually answered.
Okay.
And it was about this thing about the accents and all that kind of stuff. And what they did in the film, which I thought was really, really clever, is the different tribes that they show in Wakanda, it's pretty much different areas of Africa.
Yes, I thought that, though, because some of them I thought, hey, you look a bit like sort of the Maasai Mara type tribe, thing.
Exactly.
And you look more like the people you would expect from East Africa. So I thought, I did pick up on a little bit of that, but obviously not to any
There's things like, there's all these different things. Like, for instance, you know when he goes into the spirit realm to speak to his father?
Yes.
There's what he's wearing in there is very, very, like, it's the kind of stuff we would wear in Nigeria to go to weddings and all that kind of stuff.
Like sort of tunic, isn't it?
Yeah, the bit towards the end when he comes in, and like I was watching with my wife Claudia, who's Ghanaian, and we both went because there's a certain amount of cloth, there's a certain type of cloth he's wearing called kente, which is from Ghana, and so Wakanda is this Pan Africa thing, and the Jabari, the sort of mountain tribe,
silverback gorilla thing.
The ones who have the silverback gorilla as a totem.
Yeah.
Those guys, I'm looking at, and the accent that the guy, Winston Duke, uses to play M'Baku is Nigerian. That is a dyed-in-the-wool Nigerian accent. Like, everything he says in the film, it just almost had me in stitches, especially the bit where they're having this, like, there's a bit where they're having this really sort of, like, heartfelt discussion and everything like that. He just goes, oh, are you done?
Yeah.
every single Nigerian I know who's watched that cracks up, because that is what would happen if you put a Nigerian in that kind of sort of situation. But it's so when it comes to the representation of Africa on screen, I think it was really, really good. You make a really good point about, because very often when you have the pictures of Africa on screen, it is from the point of view of an outsider looking at Africa. So, like, for instance, you think about the great depictions of Africa on screen, and you're thinking things like Zulu and that. Or even Black Hawk Down.
In the mist, you only see that through the prism of an outsider coming in.
And I think even one of the actresses was saying that they were asking about why, like, all the women in Wakanda have natural hair. They don't have, their hair isn't relaxed, or the hair isn't straight, essentially. And she pointed out, she was like, we spoke about this, and we said Wakanda is a country that has never been colonized. And what happens is, like, the straightening of black people's hair came about because they looked at white people and they thought, oh, that is the standard of beauty to keep up to. So let's straighten our hair, because then we'll get to that standard of beauty and maybe be accepted that way. And she says, but in Wakanda, they never got colonized, so they never had to deal with that, so they never straightened their hair. And it's details like that make me think, okay, this film is just, they're thinking about it.
I'm happy you picked up on that.
That's the whole thing with Marvel, is that they actually do that, don't they? They take the trouble to actually work out, you know, the finer points like that, the details that probably other superhero movies would miss.
They weren't explicit about it, but I assume that the character played by Andy Serkis, he's sort of like a Boer almost, isn't he?
He's South African.
That was interesting as well, because he is a white African.
Yeah.
So if he was from other Afrikaans type background, then I thought, well, that's interesting, because they're saying as well, you know, that there is white, you can be African and be white as well. They didn't make him a European. They made him someone who had it sounded like a South African, Afrikaans type accent.
Well, it was definitely an Afrikaans accent.
Yeah.
And I think even in that, the fact that he refers to all the Wakandans as savages, like repeatedly refers to them as savages, even then it starts to go into, yeah, okay, yeah, white African. Ooh, there's a needle there.
So
I'm just really happy with that. Okay, I'm happy you enjoyed it, Sharon.
Yes, I thought it was, yeah, it was worth a visit, definitely.
Okay, cool. And I think we're out of time now. And so we will say goodbye then. Thank you so much for listening. Sharon.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye, and we'll see you guys next week. Thank you.